from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be with you on a Friday. Glad to be getting ready for baseball back in action here as we get the Royals back in action today against the White Sox. We say these things all the time. These are games that they should dominate. They get the next 9 games at home. Okay, next 9 games at home against teams that aren't above 500. These are the times that if they're going to stay in a playoff race, if they're going to maximize the potential before the trade deadline, even if you want to look at it even more in the micro, they become very important. They're huge favorites tonight, like minus 205, as big as you get against the White Sox. Sox are going to, and they should be, right. They totally should be. And so we'll see. But they have, in these series lately, where you're like, okay, they should be. They lost 2 of 3 in Colorado, right? They couldn't get the sweep against Miami at home. They did get 2 of 3. They dropped 3 against Texas on the road. They dropped 2 of 3 against Oakland on the road. They should be, but they haven't always been. You know what I mean? We keep looking at these opportunities, and we keep feeling like they left meat on the bone. And they can't do that now. Can't do that. They need to get it done the right way. And look, sweep the White Sox. Is that so much to ask? Could you just sweep the White Sox, please?
You know, the White Sox, definitely are the worst team in baseball. They're on pace to be one of the worst teams of all time. They were swept by Pittsburgh going into the All-Star break. They've lost 4 games in a row. They have not won a series in almost a month. It's been 3-plus weeks since they last won a series, and that was against the Rockies at home. The Royals are 6-1 in the series this year against the White Sox. That's a huge reason why the Royals were able to jump out to as good of a start as they had at the beginning of the year, because they started off playing a lot of games against Chicago to kick off the season, and that really helped propel Kansas City. So, I don't think it's too much to ask that the Royals sweep this series at home. You know, it's a three-game weekend set at the K coming off of an All-Star break where you had four representatives from the team that were there in the All-Star game. And the rest of the team got a significant amount of rest. You get to kind of reset your rotation and kind of figure out exactly, you know, how you want to roll forward. And so, you know, Michael Wacha is going to get the start tonight. And, you know, he has, I think, pitched pretty well since coming off the IL a few weeks ago. So I do think that at least in this opener, you know, I understand why the Royals are favored like they are. And they should get the, I don't want to say easy victory, but it should be a fairly comfortable game if Michael Wacha pitches the way that we've seen him pitch in the last two or three weeks.
I think he will. I think Wacha is going. I think as we come down the stretch, they're going to lean into Wacha a lot. I think that this is where that veteran experience, this is where that, you know, well, it really is that as much as anything else. This is why you paid him in free agency. You know, these moments now are when, and especially when we're seeing Lugo just get a little shakier. You know, like it's been. Has not been quite as strong there. Wacha has an opportunity to sort of be a stabilizer. And we didn't, you know, you wouldn't have thought that at one point in the season, but man, he's been steady, right? He's been consistent. And honestly, as consistent as any pitcher in the rotation lately, and you love seeing that because they kind of need it right now. I mean, they have to allow themselves the ability for these pitchers to sort of work through it, but maybe he already worked through his.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of it. I mean, you know, with Wacha, there was quite a bit of concern, I think, at the beginning of the season because of the way that he came out of the gate. You know, and of course, my thought was, well, shoot, you know, they bring him in the offseason, and it really, you know, wasn't – he didn't live up to expectations, I think, through the first five or six starts of the season for him. I remember even thinking, like, you know, is this somebody that – could potentially be demoted, you know, or do you try to make a change and figure out something else in the starting rotation? And it's funny because, you know, really seems like that turning point for Wacha was when he did get injured and spent a little bit of time on the injured list. He came back in full force and, you know, has pitched really well. He's won his last two starts. The Royals have won both of those games by multiple runs. And so knowing that, I mean, I think that you've got kind of that that momentum growing, I think, for Michael Wacha. From a betting perspective tonight, in tonight's game, you mentioned the odds. I mean, the Royals are heavy, heavy favorites to a point to where, you know, I wouldn't recommend betting the money line because you're not getting good odds on the Royals winning, you know, on hitting that bet. You're not getting good odds. So I would look at the run line. And the reason I would look at the run line is because the Royals have the second best record in Major League Baseball as run line.
I'm on the run line.
Like that's the run line bet. They have the second best record in Major League Baseball as run line favorites at home. Meanwhile, the White Sox have the second worst record in Major League Baseball as run line underdogs on the road. So both of those things combined, you know, tell me that, you know, betting the run line would be kind of a smart bet, I think, for tonight's game.
It's what I'm on currently. That's what I'm on because it's not worth betting it, you know, on the money line because you're getting minus 2-1. Like you'd have to bet a dollar to win 50 cents. Like that, yeah. I'll never take
not
that.
A good bet.
Not singularly. Now, if you wanted to put that into like a little same game parlay or something, that's fine. But I'll just take. I'm comfortable with the run line against that team. I think, you know, and we'll see. And run lines are hard in baseball. They're you get good odds for a reason, right? Like you get good odds when you take the run line for a good reason. Baseball is of the sports. It's, you know, it's the most unpredictable individually in individual games as to what might happen because you could have Michael Wacha have a great game for 98% of the pitches he throws.
Yeah.
And he gives up. One mistake could be a 3-run home run, and then all of a sudden, you know what I mean. So, like, I almost never take the run line unless you get into a situation like this, and it's against a really bad team.
So, Chris Flexen is pitching for the White Sox tonight. His record is 2-8, I believe, on the season. He's got an ERA almost to 5, and this is really an interesting stat from OddsShark.com. Chris Flexen is the least profitable pitcher in Major League Baseball this year. So if you were to put $100 on the money line for the White Sox every time Chris Flexen pitched, you would be down $1,200 on the season. So, you know, the odds are not there. It's not the right play at all to do anything with Chris Flexen or the White Sox. And that's why I think from a number one, that's why the odds, I think, are so heavy for the Royals as favorites on the money line. But that's why against the spread, you know, I do think that there is still, you know, a pretty solid play there.
Yeah. And then we look ahead. So that's tonight. You look ahead at the series and you've got Singer, you've got Lugo. These are your, you know, these are three of the four. And really, you feel good about any of them. It's a sweep, Tommy. It needs to be a sweep. You're at home. You're playing the White Sox. Then you get Arizona. It needs to be 2-3. Then you get to the Cubs. It needs to be 2-3. Like, they should come out of this 9-game stretch 7-2. If they're humming and playing the way they need to play, they should come out of this stretch at 7-2.
And look, I was concerned after Seth Lugo kind of got rocked. I mean, let's be honest. He kind of got rocked in his final start before the All-Star break and kind of pitched his way out of being a starter in the All-Star game for the American League. And I was a little bit concerned. Like, okay, like that was probably the worst outing, maybe one of the top two worst outings for Seth Lugo on the season. It was very unlike him to pitch the way that he did against Boston. And I was a little bit concerned. The good thing, the silver lining, I think, going in to his start this weekend is that he gets to bounce back with the White Sox. Like, that helps, I think, a little bit. In my mind, that would maybe ease the pressure slightly. Like, okay, well, I'm playing a team that's not very good. And so I can bounce back, you know, in, I think, a fairly easy way from a disappointing outing before the All-Star break. So I do like that. I am glad that he gets the ball in this series this weekend against Chicago, because I do think that that's a prime opportunity for Lugo to sort of set the tone back for the second half of the season.
It's what are the chances he does not? What are the chances that he really struggles in the second half and comes down to earth? And it's way too early to wonder about that. But what do you think those chances are?
I think it's in the realm of possibility that he comes back to earth a little bit. But I don't think that I would be surprised if we see him fall off a cliff in the second half of the season, just because the body of work has shown, you know, throughout the first however many starts, 20 starts or whatever that he's had, you know, that he's been very, very good. And the ERA is low and the win total is high and the WHIP is low. And, you know, all of those different indicators, they're there, you know. So him having the success that he had in the first part of the season into the All-Star break, it's a larger body of work. And so to me, it does, I think, make it less likely that he completely falls off a cliff, but sure, I do think it's in the realm of possibility that he could maybe come back down to earth a little bit. I think you'd be hard pressed to expect him to do exactly what he's done over the course of the first 20 starts for the second 12, you know, to end the season. You know what I mean? Like, I think we're going to see a slightly higher ERA.
No, I do. I think, and I don't disagree. And that's what
I think he might come back down to earth a little bit.
It's what has me a little bit just curious of, we know that the Royals have to be better down the stretch than they have been so far. We know that. We've done the math. They have to be better. So if they have to be better, and if Lugo is not as strong as he was, how difficult is that? What else would have to happen in that scenario? You know what I mean? Okay, so if you told me Lugo's not going to be as good, and I told you the Royals have to be better than they were, you know, up to this point, okay, then what here? Now what are we looking at? You got to have Waka be better. You got, for sure. He would have to step it up. Reagans would have to become consistent. Brady Singer would have to become consistent. And the other thing you'd have to have is a step up from the offense, and a step up from the bullpen, because if you don't have him pitching at that level, you're going to have to be better in other places. Insert trade deadline here.
Well, you know what I mean? I almost have a different perspective on this and disagree a little bit, because I don't know if you need all of those things to make up for what could potentially be not as of a productive Seth Lugo for the remainder of the season. I think the key to this is when Cole Reagans starts games, that the Royals continue to give him run support and he gets wins when he's on the mound. I think it's as simple as that, because Seth Lugo and Cole Reagans are your two aces. They were your two pitching representatives in the All-Star game. Cole Reagans has pitched really well, but the Royals haven't won a lot of the games that Reagans has pitched in. You know, Reagans has a record of 6-6 right now, where Lugo has 11 wins on the year. So there's a major difference in the results of games so far this season that Lugo has pitched in versus games that Reagans has pitched in. Is that a coincidence? Maybe, you know, a little bit. But if you've got, if you're going to say, okay, well, there might be a possibility, and I don't disagree with this, that Lugo maybe doesn't quite have the win-loss differential for his remaining starts that he had.
Well, I don't mean win-loss. I mean his effectiveness.
Then I think that you can swap that with, hey, Cole Reagans just has to have, you know, he's got to get that run support so he can actually, the wins can get on his record, like to make up the difference in that. So I'm not even sure that it's an effectiveness question. I think it might even just be, okay, if Lugo may not be quite as effective down the stretch, then Reagans, while he's pitching, he's got to be just as good and the Royals have to score runs. I think it's as simple as that.
The Royals have scored runs. They just have to be more consistent in scoring runs. It really does come into this streaky nature of the team. And I don't look, I am still bullish on the Royals. I still absolutely like their chances to make the postseason. But I'm trying to, and it really is this, it's two things right now. It's this particular stretch of baseball games where they will have opportunities to win based on the competition. And it is trying to be predictive into the rest of the season. I think, for instance, Renfro and Melendez, when he ultimately comes back off the IL, I think they'll be better than they were in the first half. That will help the offense. I think it's pretty likely Lugo won't be as good as he was. And again, I'm saying first half is like pre-All-Star break. Okay, can those things offset each other? I don't know about Brady Singer. Do you think Brady Singer can replicate what he did pre-All-Star break? I think that's relatively unlikely based on what we've seen throughout his career. Okay, so there's another one. Basically, it's hard to imagine the starting pitching remaining as good as it was. That's, you know, we've talked about them as like top to bottom, maybe the best in the American League. So I don't think that's unreasonable to say there's a slight step back. And they can still be really good. It can still be the strength of this team. But they need everything else to step it up. So can that happen? I think it can. I think the bullpen's going to get better because they just added to the bullpen, right? And that gives you another arm. That's going to help. I don't know about the offense yet. I do think Renfro and Melendez will be better than they were. So that'll help. But I still think they've got to add pieces. And then, you know, other teams are going through this too. But these are the things that you look at and you say, how likely is it that they can reach the postseason? You know, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. And I'm not saying they shouldn't try. I think they should go all in. If you listen here, you know that. I think they should absolutely go all in and try to do it. But it will be tough. And it will be especially tough if you cannot beat bad teams. And they play a lot of them in a row right out of the gates here. That's why this feels large. And we try to break this season up into chunks. And we may be, Tommy, wasting our breath to say, win a bunch of these, keep your head above water against the really good teams, because it kind of hasn't mattered really this year, has it, who they're playing? When they're hot, they beat everybody. And when they're not, they can't beat anybody. And that's, you know, that's this. I mean, if you go back, if we pull it and we go all the way back, when they came out of the gates, Tommy, and got off to a good start. And they didn't, you know, the first two series were not good. But after that, when they really heated up, they were beating up on Houston. They had a great series. You know, Toronto's not quite as good as we thought, but they beat up on them a little bit. They took 2 or 3 against Milwaukee. You know, then they got to a stretch where they took 2 or 3 against Tampa. They got beat up a little bit. They get hot. They win 2 or 3 against Seattle. When they're not hot, they lose series to Oakland. So it's not been as easy as the opponent, but it kind of needs to be. the rest of the way. Kind of needs to be who you play matters right now. You can't, they're not going to find enough wins to stay in it if they cannot beat up on these bad teams. There won't be enough wins out there, I'm afraid. Even as streaky as they are, you have to be able to win these games.
I think consistency matters. And that's been kind of the name of the game for the Royals this season that they've really been chasing. I think that's been the major thing, whether we're talking at, you know, an individual player level, because there's been wild inconsistency from, you know, several of the pieces that they need to be consistent. The top of the lineup and Hunter Renfroe and, you know, some other MJ Melendez, some other pieces that have just, when they've been good, they've been really good. And when they've been bad, they've been really bad. Really consistently, the four guys that have been the consistent pieces of this team, they were all stars. Everybody else, they've been pretty wildly inconsistent. And
the all stars plus Walker. I think Walker has been consistent.
Walker has started off really, really bad. He started off
bad. He started off okay.
He lost four of his five first starts. Like he entered the season really poorly, like really poorly. He turned it on. He's been consistent ever since. It hasn't been a roller coaster like everybody else, but it was bad to start, and then it's gotten much better since.
That's fair.
The bullpen has been inconsistent.
Yeah.
And so that's been the name of the game from a individual level, but then from a 30,000-foot view as the team, you know, continues to move forward, is it hasn't, as great as Bobby Witt Jr. is, and Salvi and Seth Lugo's pitched great, and Cole Reagans. I mean, let Cole Reagans be that cautionary tale. He's been extremely consistent, but the Royals haven't won games when he's been pitching because the rest of the team has been inconsistent. So you've got that inconsistency that can potentially drag the rest of the team down.
And it's never enough, right? They think about, like, Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout couldn't even get to the playoffs. Okay, it's never enough to just have a couple superstars in baseball. And the Royals have not been that. It's pretty remarkable, the turnaround that they've had, no matter what else happens, right? They've already beat last year's win total. Don't ever forget that. They're already ahead of not just the pace, they're ahead of the win total. I'm optimistic. I think this will go well. I think that they are telling us they're going to be aggressive at the deadline. I think that makes the next 10 days thrilling to watch, and it starts with beating up on bad teams. White Sox happen to be one of them. You and I are both on the run line tonight. We can get more into that as we make our way into hour number two. You will hear the game tonight on the home of the Royals here, KFH. We've got more things to talk about. Let's take a glance around the NFL when we return. You know, teams are getting back at it. Certainly the Chiefs have been back at it. A lot of quarterback talk around the league. A lot of people guessing at, you know, who's going to be what, X, Y, Z. Let's take a look at the rookies. We haven't really done that. Not just the rookie, the young quarterbacks right now. And that would include, like, C.J. Stroud. But I do want to look at the rookies. And I'll ask this question because it's not, it always sounds crazy. But remember the jumps players have made in their second full season as starters. Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, Herbert. Hurts, all of them in their second season as full starters, all these great quarterbacks took massive leaps. Could we see those young quarterbacks be Super Bowl impacting players? We'll talk about that a little bit when we return. All the attention's been on the old heads here, Aaron Rodgers, etc. What about these young guys? We'll talk about it next. Sports Daily, rolling right on a Friday.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature, whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes. Nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
right, welcome back, everybody. We've been joking about hopefully everybody's survived this. I know we've had, if you're watching us on 12 News Connected there, I'm just going to blame Bill Gates for everything. Isn't that a popular thing to do in the conspiracy world? Can we just blame, thanks, Bill? This is a Microsoft issue, right? I know everybody's been dealing with it, but it was Microsoft, right?
I'm gonna let you blame. I'm not gonna say bad things about anybody.
Okay,
let me say this.
Bill might be an Odyssey client, but Bill,
it was a CrowdStrike issue. They have blamed Microsoft.
Uh huh. See.
So. Well, I don't know if they're just, you know, covering themselves or not.
They're probably who at CrowdStrike can we blame for this? What's that guy's name?
Oh, I have no idea.
Jeff. John,
I saw that their stock went down a bunch today.
You think?
Yeah,
we'll blame whoever that guy is. I mean, I assume. Never mind. Let me just catch all the jokes that I was about to make and understand that they probably people get their feelings hurt. So I will not make them. Never mind.
The entire 911 system of the state of Oregon went down. I can see a stock price hit for that.
Yeah. I mean, we have grounded airlines, and again, like, man, this is just a reminder of how tethered to these things we are. I mean, I think about this all the time. As everybody gets hacked now, I'm like, what are we going to do when somebody just turns the lights off on us? Because don't you feel like that's what's – like, that's the way to if you really want to mess with Americans, like, just disrupt our insanely busy lives. And you know, we did that recently. It did not go well for us. So hopefully everything's in all seriousness, it looks like things are coming back together. But if you've had any technical glitches today, or if you've experienced those, you know, our apologies. And hopefully everybody's able to get back on track. At least it's almost the weekend. You know, this happens on a Saturday. We probably don't care very much, right? We're just like, whatever. I'll go do something else. But we do have to wrap up the work week that way. Tommy, as we look across the NFL – it is. I actually think this time of year is kind of fun. All the wild and crazy, like rookie quarterback charting and all these things. I actually kind of like it. It gets me excited for football. It gets me excited for fantasy football. This is a fun time of year. Is it reasonable? No, it's totally ridiculous, but it's okay. Like this, we're ready for football, and this is what we do. So as we look at the young quarterbacks, I honestly, and I know there's been attention on it. I don't think we're hyping up CJ Stroud enough. I don't think the hype train is out of control like it should be with him. Best rookie season ever. Look at the pass catchers they have now. Not only do they get, you know, Tank Dell back, but they add Stephon Diggs to the mix there. They add Joe Mixon to the mix there. If their defense is worth anything this year, there is larger than a small part of me that thinks that might be the team to watch in the AFC as a contender to Kansas City. And again, I know that sounds crazy because it's like, oh, second year quarterback, whatever, we'll see you in the playoff. But this is Patrick Mahomes did this, right, in his second year. So did Burrow, so did – like all these great young players took that giant leap in their second years. And nobody would have said, oh, Patrick Mahomes is ready to win a Super Bowl, but he was. And so who's to say C.J. Stroud's not? I mean, they vastly overachieved a year ago. I think there is a real chance, and they're my favorite long shot bet, by the way, just because, and I get that the floor could be a little low because there's some overachievement last year, but when you really look at their offseason and you think about how well he played and how much they added to his repertoire, is there a team that got better offensively? I mean, Houston, Kansas City, there really aren't. I mean, there's not really many teams that got any better than they did on offense, I don't think.
I'm not sure that there's another team in the NFL that got better altogether like the Texans did. I mean, I think that just the overall improvements, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of not just offensive players, but like Daniel Hunter was signed to a contract for the Texans 2-year deal. We'll join Will Anderson, you know, to basically make that pass rush that much better for Houston. I'm bullish on them. I was bullish on them last year. I think they absolutely are a team that could make a deep run in the AFC and be a legitimate challenger to Kansas City. And it's not just because of the additions that they made. It's because, of course, C.J. Stroud. I mentioned Will Anderson and what he brought in his rookie year. He's going to be, you would think, even better this year in his second year in the league. I mean, he was the defensive rookie of the year a year ago. And so the Texans hit not only with C.J. Stroud early in the draft last year, but also with Will Anderson. And, oh, by the way, this is the number one reason why I think the Texans are going to be a legitimate challenger in the AFC this year. DeMeco Ryans, I think, is one of the best rising stars in the coaching ranks in the NFL. The pairing of him and C.J. Stroud together was awesome. And, you know, yeah, there was a few weeks early in the year where they were still kind of getting their bearings and figuring out how things were going to work. They came on strong in the second half of the season. When you look at that division, I think they are head and shoulders better than anybody else. I think they're better than the Titans by a long shot. I think that they're better than the Colts by a long shot. I think that the Jags, they disappointed a year ago. I don't think that they are going to win the division either. I think it's going to be Houston, and I think that Houston will be a team to be reckoned with in the AFC.
I do too, but don't you also think they could be better, get better, and win the same number of games or fewer?
No, that's what's wild about what they did. No, I think they're going to win more games than they did last year.
I do too. How many did they win a year ago? Was it 10?
Yeah, they were right.
I'm going to pull it up real quick. I think that when you
look 10 games. They were 10 and 7. That's right.
Yeah, so they were 10 and 7. I think they could be a much better team and be 10 and 7 again. Jacksonville will be better. Indianapolis will be better. I think Tennessee will probably be better. Like the AFC, as good as it was last year, you know, there have been a few teams you could see step backs from, but most of the teams are as good or probably a little bit better. So that's what I mean. Like the Texans, it's going to be a weird evaluation year for them, in my opinion, because they could be a much better team but only win 10 games. Anthony Richardson's back with the Colts. What if he plays a full year? And I don't mean that, and that doesn't really impact what I think they're capable of as far as winning a Super Bowl. I just think it's going to be a little bit strange of an evaluation for them this year. I also think there is a world where they could be the number 2 seed and win like 12 or 13 games.
I don't think they're going to win 10 games or fewer. I mean, you go back to last season.
You think they'll be 11 and 6?
Yeah, at minimum. I think that's their floor. I really do. And here's the reason why. It's not just because of the acquisitions that we talked about, but you go back to last season for them. They didn't have a winning record until mid-November of last year. You know, that's why I say, like, it took a while to get their bearings, and you had a brand new quarterback and a brand new head coach. And they both first-time quarterback in the league, first-time head coach in the league. They had to kind of figure things out a little bit. They started off the season 0-2, and then they kind of hovered around 500 or under 500 through September, all of October, and the very beginning of November. That sort of growing pains, that learning curve, won't be there this season. I think they get out of the gates hot. I think they start off this season above 500 and stay there throughout the duration of the year. I think that they will win 11 games minimum, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's 12 or even 13.
Their win total is 9.5, so you'd be over that. I would be too, but I think there's a reason that they're at 9.5.
Why? Why?
Well,
they're the same. They're the same team as a year ago.
For what I
just
said, I know. Because I think everybody else is getting better. Because I think they played in a division last year where everything went wrong for Jacksonville, where Indianapolis lost their quarterback, and I just think.
But what did any of those teams do this offseason to get demonstrably better? Like Jacksonville didn't. They didn't do anything to really improve.
They got rid of Calvin Ridley. But I also
addition by subtraction, maybe. I don't know. But
right. I've watched a little bit.
Indianapolis didn't do anything to add this year. I mean, they're gonna get Anthony Richardson.
Get Anthony Richardson back.
You know, but they didn't do anything.
They drafted an early wide receiver. They did things to get better.
And Tennessee, I think, is gonna be really bad this year.
Well, so, they added Calvin Ridley. I don't think Tennessee will be as bad as they were a year ago, but I also
sure
don't think
about
they'll
that?
Be very
I mean,
good.
They don't have they Mike won't Vrabel be, they, there. They don't like the who are they rolling with the quarterback? Is it?
You know, don't like Tennessee. I'm don't misunderstand. I just think that they they are different than they were. It's mostly Jacksonville. I find it hard to imagine everything will go as badly for Jacksonville as it did a year ago.
Like, is Will Levis really going to do? You know, is he going to be lead the Titans to a winning record this year? I don't think so.
A winning record? No. Not at all. But when Houston plays these teams, there's a chance they'll be better than they were a year ago, especially if Anthony Richardson's there. And I've seen people talk about Jacksonville enough, like smart football people. They had a schematic issue that they could not overcome, that people believe that they can.
So, going back to my Will Levis question, will Will Levis make the Titans better than 6-11? Because 6-11 was their record last year.
He's one of the young quarterbacks that I want to hit on here. And I don't know. But what I will say is quarterbacks that are good in this league make their jumps usually in year two. Just go back and look at all the quarterbacks that you would say are good quarterbacks right now. Go look at any of them and look at what they did in their second years. There's not really a regression that happens. They get better in their second years. So I do think that it will be very interesting to take a look at some of the rest of that group from a year ago and see what they do, right? What does Bryce Young do this year? He's got to be better because he was awful last year. Or it's done. Like, if Bryce Young isn't good, then he's not ever going to be probably any good. There are a lot of guys that fit in there. Will Levis is one of them. I think he overachieved from what people thought a year ago. And then you look at the rookie quarterbacks, because this was that quarterback class, right? This is what we see out of all these guys. How many of them... By the way, you know, one other name of the guys in sort of a second full year. What about the step Jordan Love could take this year? Is he one of those guys? He certainly has the,
I think so.
You know, the pieces around him. But you go and you look at the rookies then now. Is there a C.J. Stroud, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes type first year of playing in the NFL out of this group? I certainly think there is the possibility, and Caleb Williams is at the forefront. I got to tell you, I like Caleb Williams. It's getting annoying how many non-football things continue to pop into his headlines. No contract. Like, man, I'm ready to just see him play football because I'm so sick of talking about everything else with him. And I love what the Bears have surrounded him with. I do. You know, can Jaden Daniels be a really impactful rookie? He's very talented. I don't like his situation hardly at all in Washington. I don't really like what's around him there. Drake May's not going to have a lot to work with. I think J.J. McCarthy, by the time he takes the reins, will probably end up being real good. Like, he'll be able to step right, because he's not going to get it right away, but just all the weaponry there. It is an interesting class, and C.J. Stroud came out of last year's, and we didn't see it. So if it's not Caleb Williams, because I don't think most people saw C.J. Stroud as that guy last year, Caleb Williams is the number one overall pick. And if it's not Caleb Williams, though, which of these guys this year do you think is capable of that C.J. Stroud? You know what? Let's leave Caleb Williams in it. Any of them capable of that sort of C.J. Stroud? Even go back to what Justin Herbert did his rookie year, if you remember it. Like, anybody taking that sort of, making that sort of impact, you think, this year?
Well, the easy answer is Caleb Williams because of the weapons that he has at wide receiver.
Is.
Like, that's the best, I think, wide receiver collection out of all the rookie quarterbacks. Of course,
so good.
Of course, J.J. McCarthy has Justin Jefferson, but really, other than that, like, you know, there's
Addison and Will
Addison,
Hawkins.
But you know, Addison may miss a little bit of time. I don't know if you saw that. You know, he got arrested
time.
And
I
all
did.
That. But
I did.
You know, I think overall the quarterback collection is probably better for Caleb Williams, and I think that those quarterbacks fit Caleb Williams the best. But outside of Williams, I'm going Jaden Daniels. I actually do like his situation in Washington. I think I think he does. He's got good weapons. Brian Robinson is a good back, and he's got Terry McLaurin, and he's got Jahan Dotson. Like, there are good
Austin Eckler.
There are good wide receivers in Washington. They also made some improvements on the offensive line. Former Chief Andrew Wiley is going to start at right tackle for the Commanders, and so I do think that Jaden Daniels has a good situation, probably not as good as the one that Caleb Williams is walking into, but I've always liked Jaden Daniels in his game.
I know, he's your
more
guy.
More than Caleb Williams' game, so if I do think that you can compensate with that.
If he can bail out the line, he's going to have a chance to be okay. I agree. But he's got to bail out the line because that's been an issue there. But yeah, Dotson, McLaurin, they've got some dudes. They do. And they've also, of course, they've got a new coach there as well. So I love thinking about this stuff because I love good quarterback play. I wish every team in the league had a good quarterback. It's the game is better. C.J. Stroud was a blast to watch last year. I do think Caleb Williams can be that guy. I really do. There are a lot of things now, a lot more that, you know, spook me a little bit than there used to be. Just always something. You know, there's always something that's not football, it seems like, with him. But, man, I love his game, and they have done such a good job of putting the pieces around him. I suppose you could still say coaching might be a concern there. I don't know. But I do know that they're the players that impact this league the most. Houston was the biggest surprise of last year. C.J. Stroud's the reason why. Now they've given him a bunch of weapons, so we'll see. Just a couple of things around the NFL as you know, headlines are kind of coming in. Not much from Chiefs camp yesterday, by the way. It was kind of a quiet day as they get ready to really ramp it up here right away. This weekend they'll be taking it in full force. All right, let's set up our second giveaway. This will be the final pair of our NBC World Series tickets we're doing. So you can get your hands on some of those tickets by texting the keyword right now, STRIKE, STRIKE, to 20357. That'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets. Message and data rates apply. Last day for this, so if you want to go out to the NBC World Series, now's your chance. Enter that keyword, STRIKE, 20357. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back more Sports Daily right after this. I was seeing this report in The Athletic this morning, Tommy, that the Royals and Rangers were real close to a trade last year at the deadline that would have sent Salvador Perez and Brady Singer to the Rangers.
I read that.
And brought back John Gray, I think, and I don't know who else was in it. Boy.
Woo.
You think they would have regretted that one?
Well, and, you know, Salvi, it sounded like, was open to that. If they could have gotten a deal done, he was willing to waive his no-trade clause and do that.
It was an interesting, I mean, we remember back to that. That was the big question is, would he be willing? And I guess he was for that one. That would have been an interesting collision of my worlds, as Salvador Perez has become my favorite non-Ranger as far as just, you know, favorite players go. People that listen to this show know that. I love Salvador Perez. I think he is one of the most fun players to watch. Future Hall of Famer. This season would be very different without those two players. Trade deadline is a risky proposition. Not usually as much when you're adding, but yeah, you think about that as a seller. This season would not have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you wouldn't be in this position right now. That's wild.
Hey, by the way, kind of a change of topic here really quick. We haven't talked about the Open Championship at all today. Tiger Woods going to miss the cut. He's done.
Because nobody interesting is in the mix.
That's not true. I mean, Justin Rose is in the mix. Shane Lowry is in the mix. Like, there are some players that are, you know,
real
are right
needle
there
movers. Justin Rose and Shane Lowry. I mean, they're fine. Scheffler's close.
Yeah, Scheffler is right. I mean, he's in the top five. So, you know, of course, he's, you know, he made that move earlier today. But yeah, I mean, I think obviously the top storyline, Tiger, 14 over through the first two rounds, going to miss that cut. And, I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't think anybody should
ideal.
Be at this point. I mean, he's just not going to be able to go out and, you know, compete at a high level like he used to.
Gary Woodland had himself around today. Has anybody been better than his 68 today? I mean, he had a 68 today. I don't know if you saw that.
I think there have been a couple people that have matched that. I know that Billy Horschel had a 68. I don't know if anybody went lower than that.
I mean, that is wild. It's scoring a little better today, but he, you know, he played himself into the weekend for sure. And Adam Hadwin, just one over through seven. So he's, if he can, you know, if he can score like some of these other guys, what's the cut line at right now?
Looks like the cut line five over
five. So Hadwin's at five. And I think the difference in why that's more interesting maybe than perhaps it normally is because the difference between the leaders and the cut line is much, you know, much smaller probably than it might normally be. And we know in this tournament in particular, Shane Lowry could come out and fire a five over.
And then Shane Lowry's a former Open champion, you know, won it a couple of years ago. Justin Thomas, who was near the top of the lead or at the top of the lead yesterday, is in the middle of a terrible round right now. He's seven over on his round and has fallen all the way back to just one stroke inside the cut line. So he's got to do a little bit of work to make sure that he even makes the cut. And that's the difference in, you know, a tournament like this is that you can have a great round and then it can all fall apart and all of a sudden you're maybe outside of the cut line.
But you put together two good rounds on the weekend, regardless of what you did. If you make the cut, you might win the tournament.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You go back-to-back 68s like Woodland shoots today, and then all of a sudden, we'll see. I need you to keep me apprised, Tommy. I will be running around a bunch this weekend. If Woodland or Hadwin get into the mix, just let me know, and I'll you know, pay a little bit of attention. Not a ton.
You know,
we've got TBT
some other
going
notable
this weekend and...
yeah, other notable names that are going to miss the cut. Rory, I mean, unless he does something crazy, you know, here in the next, you know, he's only played five holes on the day, but he's five over in those five holes. He's 12 over overall. He's got to really turn it around as the second half of his second round continues. He's going to miss the cut. It looks like, you know, who else is going to miss the cut here? That's notable. Really, it's mainly those two. Max Homa is going to miss the cut, probably. Victor Hovland, Adam Scott, Zach Johnson, Ricky Fowler looks like he's probably going to miss the cut. And then, of course, there's a bunch of those golfers that are right on the line, like Phil Mickelson is right there. Bryson DeChambeau is right there. They're right on the cut line, you know, to see if they end up making the weekend.
Yeah, it's fine. I need Scheffler to be in it or one of the guys I'm following to, because I'll be watching TBT. I'm going to go to the Wind Surge game tomorrow. Like, I got other things that are going to trump the British Open. But they're playing in Great Britain, I believe. Scotland's still a part of Great Britain, right? I'm not a good world geographer.
Yeah, I don't know my European.
Chad, is Scotland still in Great Britain? They are. Right?
I believe they voted to remain. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that was a thing recently, but you know, we're your experts on geopolitical
England,
things
Scotland,
here on
and
Sports
Wales. Day. Those are apparently
Boom.
The three countries that make
one of the Irelands.
Britain.
I thought one of the Irelands was still in it.
No, it's currently England, Scotland, and Wales.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's still the British Open until forever. Unless they play it in France, then I'll call it something else. It's all very confusing. We're going to come back. We'll sort it out. We'll tell you what's on the scope this weekend on Sports Daily when we return. Welcome back, everybody. We've been joking about hopefully everybody's survived this. I know we've had, if you're watching us on 12 News Connected, there. I'm just going to blame Bill Gates for everything. Isn't that a popular thing to do in the conspiracy world? Can we just blame, thanks, Bill. This is a Microsoft issue, right? I know everybody's been dealing with it, but it was Microsoft, right?
I'm going to let you blame. I'm not going to say bad things about anybody.
Okay.
Let me say this.
Bill might be an Odyssey client, but Bill,
it was a CrowdStrike issue. They have blamed Microsoft.
Uh-huh. See?
So, well, I don't know if they're just, you know, covering themselves or not.
They're probably who at CrowdStrike can we blame for this? What's that guy's name?
Oh, I have no idea.
Jeff John,
I saw that their stock went down a bunch today.
You think?
Yeah, like if ton.
We'll blame whoever that guy is. I mean, I assume. Never mind. Let me just catch all the jokes that I was about to make and understand that they probably people get their feelings hurt. So I will not make them. Never mind.
Entire 911 system of the state of Oregon went down. I can see a stock price hit for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have grounded airlines. And again, like, man, this is just a reminder of how tethered to these things we are. I mean, I think about this all the time. As everybody gets hacked now, I'm like, what are we going to do when somebody just turns the lights off on us? Because don't you feel like that's the way to really, if you really want to mess with Americans, like, just disrupt our insanely busy lives. And you know, we did that recently. It did not go well for us. So hopefully everything's, in all seriousness, it looks like things are coming back together. But if you've had any technical glitches today, if you've experienced those, you know, our apologies. And hopefully everybody's able to get back on track. At least it's almost the weekend. You know, this happens on a Saturday. We probably don't care very much, right? We're just like, whatever. I'll go do something else. But we do have to wrap up the work week that way. Tommy, as we look across the NFL, it is, we're going to, I actually think this time of year is kind of fun. All the wild and crazy, like, rookie quarterback charting and all these things. I actually kind of like it. It gets me excited for football. It gets me excited for fantasy football. This is a fun time of year. Is it reasonable? No, it's totally ridiculous, but it's okay. Like this, we're ready for football, and this is what we do. So as we look at the young quarterbacks, I honestly, and I know there's been attention on it. I don't think we're hyping up CJ Stroud enough. I don't think the hype train is out of control like it should be with him. Best rookie season ever. Look at the pass catchers they have now. Not only do they get, you know, Tank Dell back, but they add Stephon Diggs to the mix there. They add Joe Mixon to the mix there. If their defense is worth anything this year, there is larger than a small part of me that thinks that might be the team to watch in the AFC as a contender to Kansas City. And again, I know that sounds crazy because it's like, oh, second year quarterback, whatever, we'll see you in the playoff. But this is Patrick Mahomes did this right in his second year. So did Burrow. So did like all these great young players took that giant leap in their second years. And nobody would have said, oh, Patrick Mahomes is ready to win a Super Bowl, but he was. And so who's to say C.J. Stroud's not? I mean, they vastly overachieved a year ago. I think there is a real chance, and they're my favorite long shot bet, by the way, just because, and I get that the floor could be a little low, because there's some overachievement last year. But when you really look at their offseason and you think about how well he played and how much they added to his repertoire, is there a team that got better offensively? I mean, Houston, Kansas City, there really aren't. I mean, there's not really many teams that got any better than they did on offense, I don't think.
I'm not sure that there's another team in the NFL that got better altogether like the Texans did. I mean, I think that just the overall improvements, you know, because, you know, there's a lot of not just offensive players, but like Daniel Hunter was signed to a contract for the Texans, 2-year deal. We'll join Will Anderson, you know, to basically make that pass rush that much better for Houston. I'm bullish on them. I was bullish on them last year. I think they absolutely are a team that could make a deep run in the AFC and be a legitimate challenger to Kansas City. And it's not just because of the additions that they made. It's because, of course, C.J. Stroud. I mentioned Will Anderson and what he brought in his rookie year. He's going to be, you would think, even better this year in his second year in the league. I mean, he was the defensive rookie of the year a year ago. And so the Texans hit not only with C.J. Stroud early in the draft last year, but also with Will Anderson. And, oh, by the way, this is the number one reason why I think the Texans are going to be a legitimate challenger in the AFC this year. DeMeco Ryans, I think, is one of the best rising stars in the coaching ranks in the NFL. The pairing of him and C.J. Stroud together was awesome. And, you know, yeah, there was a few weeks early in the year where they were still kind of getting their bearings and figuring out how things were going to work. They came on strong in the second half of the season. When you look at that division, I think they are head and shoulders better than anybody else. I think they're better than the Titans by a long shot. I think that they're better than the Colts by a long shot. I think that the Jags, they disappointed a year ago. I don't think that they are going to win the division either. I think it's going to be Houston, and I think that Houston will be a team to be reckoned with in the AFC.
I do too, but don't you also think they could be better, get better, and win the same number of games or fewer?
No, that's what's wild about what they did. No, I think they're going to win more games than they did last year.
I do too. How many did they win a year ago? Was it 10?
Yeah, they were right.
I'm going to pull it up real quick. I think that when you
look 10 games, they were 10-7. That's right.
Yeah, so they were 10-7. I think they could be a much better team and be 10-7 again. Jacksonville will be better. Indianapolis will be better. I think Tennessee will probably be better. Like the AFC, as good as it was last year, you know, there have been a few teams you could see step backs from, but most of the teams are as good or probably a little bit better. So that's what I mean. Like the Texans, it's going to be a weird evaluation year for them, in my opinion, because they could be a much better team but only win 10 games. Anthony Richardson's back with the Colts. What if he plays a full year? And I don't mean that, and that doesn't really impact what I think they're capable of as far as winning a Super Bowl. I just think it's going to be a little bit strange of an evaluation for them this year. I also think there is a world where they could be the number 2 seed and win like 12 or 13 games.
I don't think they're going to win 10 games or fewer. I mean, you go back to last season.
You think they'll be 11-6?
Yeah, at minimum. I think that's their floor. I really do. And here's the reason why. It's not just because of the acquisitions that we talked about, but you go back to last season for them. They didn't have a winning record until mid-November of last year. You know, that's why I say, like, it took a while to get their bearings, and you had a brand new quarterback and a brand new head coach. And they both first-time quarterback in the league, first-time head coach in the league. They had to kind of figure things out a little bit. They started off the season 0-2, and then they kind of hovered around 500 or under 500 through September, all of October, and the very beginning of November. That sort of growing pains, that learning curve, won't be there this season. I think they get out of the gates hot. I think they start off this season above 500 and stay there throughout the duration of the year. I think that they will win 11 games minimum, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's 12 or even 13.
Their win total is 9.5, so you'd be over that. I would be too, but I think there's a reason that they're at 9.5.
Why? Why?
Well,
they're the same team as a year ago.
For what I just said, I know for what, because I think everybody else is getting better, because I think they played in a division last year where everything went wrong for Jacksonville, where Indianapolis lost their quarterback. And I just think,
but what did any of those teams do this offseason to get demonstrably better? Like Jacksonville didn't. They didn't do anything to really improve.
They got rid of Calvin Ridley. But I also...
addition by subtraction, maybe. I don't know. But
right. I've watched a little bit.
Indianapolis didn't do anything to add this year. I mean, they're gonna get Anthony Richardson back. You know, but they didn't do anything.
They drafted an early wide receiver. They did things to get better.
And Tennessee, I think, is going to be really bad this year.
Well, they added Calvin Ridley. I don't think Tennessee will be as bad as they were a year ago. But I also
sure
don't think they'll
that?
Be very good.
They won't be there. They don't like the.
Who
are they rolling with? The quarterback is it?
I don't like Tennessee. Don't misunderstand. I just think that they are different than they were. It's mostly Jacksonville. I find it hard to imagine everything will go as badly for Jacksonville as it did a year ago.
Like, is Will Levis really going to do? Yeah, is he going to be lead the Titans to a winning record this year? I mean, I don't think so.
A winning record? No. Not at all. But when Houston plays these teams, there's a chance they'll be better than they were a year ago, especially if Anthony Richardson's there. And I've seen people talk about Jacksonville enough, like smart football people. They had a schematic issue that they could not overcome, that people believe that they can.
So going back to my Will Levis question, will Will Levis make the Titans better than 6-11? Because 6-11 was their record last year.
He's one of the young quarterbacks that I want to hit on here. And I don't know, but what I will say is quarterbacks that are good in this league make their jumps usually in year two. Just go back and look at all the quarterbacks that you would say are good quarterbacks right now. Go look at any of them and look at what they did in their second years. There's not really a regression that happens. They get better in their second years. So I do think that it will be very interesting to take a look at some of the rest of that group from a year ago and see what they do, right? What does Bryce Young do this year? He's got to be better because he was awful last year. Or it's done. Like if Bryce Young isn't good, then he's not ever going to be probably any good. There are a lot of guys that fit in there. Will Levis is one of them. I think he overachieved from what people thought a year ago. And then you look at the rookie quarterbacks, because this was that quarterback class, right? This is what we see out of all these guys. How many of them? By the way, you know, one other name of the guys in sort of a second full year. What about the step Jordan Love could take this year? Is he one of those guys? He certainly has.
Yeah, I think so.
You know, the pieces around him. But you go and you look at the rookies then now. Is there a C.J. Stroud, Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes type first year of playing in the NFL out of this group? I certainly think there is the possibility, and Caleb Williams is at the forefront. I got to tell you, I like Caleb Williams. It's getting annoying how many non-football things continue to pop into his headlines. No contract. Like, man, I'm ready to just see him play football because I'm so sick of talking about everything else with him. And I love what the Bears have surrounded him with. I do. You know, can Jaden Daniels be a really impactful rookie? He's very talented. I don't like his situation hardly at all in Washington. I don't really like what's around him there. Drake May's not going to have a lot to work with. I think J.J. McCarthy, by the time he takes the reins, will probably end up being real good. Like he'll be able to step right, because he's not going to get it right away, but just all the weaponry there. It is an interesting class, and C.J. Stroud came out of last year's, and we didn't see it. So if it's not Caleb Williams, because I don't think most people saw C.J. Stroud as that guy last year, Caleb Williams is the number one overall pick. And if it's not Caleb Williams, though, which of these guys this year do you think is capable of that C.J. Stroud? You know what? Let's leave Caleb Williams in it. Any of them capable of that sort of C.J. Stroud? Even go back to what Justin Herbert did his rookie year, if you remember it. Like, anybody taking that sort of, making that sort of impact, you think, this year?
Well, the easy answer is Caleb Williams because of the weapons that he has at wide receiver.
Is.
Like, that's the best, I think, wide receiver collection out of all the rookie quarterbacks. Of course,
so good.
Of course, J.J. McCarthy has Justin Jefferson, but really, other than that, like, you know, there's
and Addison and Will
Addison,
Hopkins.
But you know, Addison may miss a little bit of time. I don't know if you saw that. You know, he got arrested and all that. But
I did.
You know, I think overall the quarterback collection is probably better for Caleb Williams, and I think that those quarterbacks fit Caleb Williams the best. But outside of Williams, I'm going Jaden Daniels. I actually do like his situation in Washington. I think
his
he
legs
does,
could.
I think he does. Have, he's got he's got good weapons. Brian Robinson is a good back, and he's got Terry McLaurin, and he's got Jahan Dotson. Like, there are good
Austin Eckler.
There are good wide receivers in Washington. They also made some improvements on the offensive line. Former Chief Andrew Wiley is going to start at right tackle for the Commanders, and so I do think that Jaden Daniels has a good situation, probably not as good as the one that Caleb Williams is walking into, but I've always liked Jaden Daniels in his game.
I know, he's your
more
guy.
Than Caleb Williams' game. So if I do think that you can compensate with that.
If he can bail out the line, he's going to have a chance to be okay. I agree. But he's got to bail out the line because that's been an issue there. But yeah, Dotson, McLaurin, they've got some dudes. They do. And they've also, of course, they've got a new coach there as well. So I love thinking about this stuff because I love good quarterback play. I wish every team in the league had a good quarterback. The game is better. C.J. Stroud was a blast to watch last year. I do think Caleb Williams can be that guy. I really do. There are a lot of things now, a lot more that, you know, spook me a little bit than there used to be. Just always something. You know, there's always something that's not football, it seems like, with him. But, man, I love his game, and they have done such a good job of putting the pieces around him. I suppose you could still say coaching might be a concern there. I don't know. But I do know that they're the players that impact this league the most. Houston was the biggest surprise of last year. C.J. Stroud's the reason why. Now they've given him a bunch of weapons, so we'll see. Just a couple of things around the NFL as you know, headlines are kind of coming in. Not much from Chiefs camp yesterday, by the way. It was kind of a quiet day as they get ready to really ramp it up here right away. This weekend they'll be taking it in full force. All right, let's set up our second giveaway. This will be the final pair of our NBC World Series tickets we're doing. So you can get your hands on some of those tickets by texting the keyword right now, STRIKE, STRIKE, to 20357. That'll give you a chance to win a pair of tickets. Message and data rates apply. Last day for this, so if you want to go out to the NBC World Series, now's your chance. Enter that keyword, STRIKE, 20357. Good luck, everybody. We'll come back more Sports Daily right after this. I was seeing this report in The Athletic this morning, Tommy, that the Royals and Rangers were real close to a trade last year at the deadline that would have sent Salvador Perez and Brady Singer to the Rangers.
I read that.
And brought back John Gray, I think, and I don't know who else was in it. Boy.
Woo.
You think they would have regretted that one?
Well, and, you know, Salvi, it sounded like, was open to that. If they could have gotten a deal done, he was willing to waive his no-trade clause and do that.
It was an interesting, I mean, we remember back to that. That was the big question is, would he be willing? And I guess he was for that one. That would have been an interesting collision of my worlds, as Salvador Perez has become my favorite non-Ranger as far as just, you know, favorite players go. I people that listen to this show know that. I love Salvador Perez. I think he is one of the most fun players to watch. Future Hall of Famer. This season would be very different without those two players. Trade deadline is a risky proposition. Not usually as much when you're adding, but yeah, you think about that as a seller. This season would not have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you wouldn't be in this position right now. That's wild.
Hey, by the way, kind of a change of topic here really quick. We haven't talked about the Open Championship at all today. Tiger Woods going to miss the cut. He's done.
Because nobody interesting is in the mix.
That's not true. It's not. I mean, Justin Rose is in the mix. Shane Lowry is in the mix. Like, there are some players that are, you know,
real
are right
needle
there
movers. Oh, Justin Rose and Shane Lowry. I mean, they're fine. Scheffler's close.
Yeah, Scheffler is right. I mean, he's in the top five. So, you know, of course, he made that move earlier today. But yeah, I mean, it's, I think obviously the top storyline, Tiger, 14 over through the first two rounds, going to miss that cut. And, I mean, I'm not surprised. I don't think anybody should
ideal.
Be at this point. I mean, he's just not going to be able to go out and, you know, compete at a high level like he used to.
Gary Woodland is had himself around today. Has anybody been better than his 68 today? I mean, he had a 68 today. I don't know if you saw that.
I think
that.
There have been a couple people that have matched that. I know that Billy Horschel had a 68. I don't know if anybody went lower than that.
I mean, that is wild. It's scoring a little better today, but he, you know, he played himself into the weekend for sure. And Adam Hadwin just one over through seven. So he's, if he can, you know, if he can score like some of these other guys, what's the cut line at right now?
Looks like the cut line
five.
Yeah, five over.
Five. So Hadwin's at five. And I think the difference in why that's more interesting maybe than perhaps it normally is because the difference between the leaders and the cut line is much, you know, much smaller probably than it might normally be. And we know in this tournament in particular, Shane Lowry could come out and fire a five over.
And then Shane Lowry's a former Open champion, you know, won it a couple of years ago. Justin Thomas, who was near the top of the lead or at the top of the lead yesterday, is in the middle of a terrible round right now. He's seven over on his round and has fallen all the way back to just one stroke inside the cut line. So he's got to do a little bit of work to make sure that he even makes the cut. And that's the difference in, you know, a tournament like this is that you can have a great round and then it can all fall apart and all of a sudden you're maybe outside of the cut line.
But you put together two good rounds on the weekend, regardless of what you did. If you make the cut, you might win the tournament.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You go back-to-back 68s like Woodland shoots today, and then all of a sudden, we'll see. I need you to keep me apprised, Tommy. I will be running around a bunch this weekend. If Woodland or Hadwin get into the mix, just let me know, and I'll you know, pay a little bit of attention. Not a ton.
You know, other notable names that are going to miss the cut. Rory. I mean, unless he does something crazy, you know, here in the next, you know, he's only played five holes on the day, but he's five over in those five holes. He's 12 over overall. He's got to really turn it around as the second half of his second round continues. He's going to miss the cut. It looks like, you know, who else is going to miss the cut here? That's notable. Really, it's mainly those two. Max Homa is going to miss the cut probably. Victor Hovland, Adam Scott, Zach Johnson, Ricky Fowler looks like he's probably going to miss the cut. And then, of course, there's a bunch of those golfers that are right on the line, like Phil Mickelson is right there. Bryson DeChambeau is right there. They're right on the cut line, you know, to see if they end up making the weekend.
Yeah, it's fine. I need Scheffler to be in it or one of the guys I'm following it because I'll be watching TBT. I'm going to go to the Wind Surge game tomorrow. Like I got other things that are going to trump the British Open. But they're playing in Great Britain, I believe. Scotland's still a part of Great Britain, right? I'm not a good world geographer.
Yeah, I don't know my European.
Chad, is Scotland still in Great Britain? They are. Right?
I believe they voted to remain. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that was a thing recently, but you know. We're your experts on geopolitical
England,
things
Scotland,
here on
and Wales. Those are apparently the three countries that make
one of the Irelands. I thought one of the Irelands was still in it.
No, it's currently England, Scotland, and Wales.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, it's still the British Open until forever. Unless they play it in France, then I'll call it something else. It's all very confusing. We're going to come back. We'll sort it out. We'll tell you what's on the scope this weekend on Sports Daily when we return.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Oh, O'Reilly. Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Odyssey celebrates the back-to-school season, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.